This is Ozarks at Large. As we head toward the fall elections, talk in the air once again of third-party candidates being involved as we get closer to Election Day. Here to talk about the last great run by someone not from the Big Two, our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back, Bill.
Glad to be here, Kyle.
You're obviously talking about Reform Party and Ross Perot.
No, actually not.
Not John Anderson?
Nope.
George Wallace, who carried Arkansas in...
That's very interesting, okay. But not today.
Dixiecrats?
No, I was thinking of the great progressive era showdown of 1912.
And I was not, so help me out.
Well, there's a recent book by James Chase called, very original, 1912. And the current resurgence of progressivism is what got me thinking about that book and this fall's events.
You mentioned progressives. We've talked about progressives before in this segment. This brings them to the forefront?
Everyone claimed to be a progressive in this election, and that's one of the real sort of fun fact things about it politically. The sitting president, William Howard Taft, was the Republican who had busted more trusts in U.S. history than any other president. Remarkably, in only 4 years in office, he started off saying, of course, he was a progressive. Then there's the former president, Theodore Roosevelt, who after failing to win the GOP nomination, went out on his own and, of course, called himself a
progressive.
And the Democrats went with the former New Jersey governor and former Princeton president, Woodrow Wilson, who clearly also was a
progressive.
In this race, you also, though, have an outsider group that really thought themselves to be progressive and the other three not so much. It gets me thinking about outsiders, kind of like Ron Paul's supporters, who are convinced today that there's no difference between the two main parties. What you had in 1912 was Eugene V. Debs and the Socialists, the fourth party candidate, who thought the other three were just all the same.
Well, when you have historical hindsight and you see these names, Teddy Roosevelt, who had been president, William Taft, who was president, Woodrow Wilson, who had become president, and then Eugene Debs, it sounds like a dynamo of an election.
It is. This election really had it all. It's the first time you've got a former president running third party. You had a former president run. That would be?
Grover Cleveland.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
very
when good. He won very his second non-consecutive term.
Exactly. You have two major academics involved in this, four major parties going for national voting power, and assassination attempts.
Assassination attempts. I think you know what? I don't think you're talking about history today. I think you've grabbed an old script from 24.
No, this is not the unshot season, and Jack Bauer is not involved. But this is another great example of how truth is stranger than fiction. And I just pull this one little nugget out of the 1914 run and this book to sort of illustrate that. You've got Teddy Roosevelt, a very charismatic speaker, very popular on the stump, going out and speaking to various groups. He is on his way to a speech, and an assailant who was trying in his mind to prevent a monarchy and stop a third term, because, you know, Roosevelt had become president for almost a complete full term,
after
courtesy
McKinley.
Of the McKinley assassination,
right.
had his own reelection, and now, in many people's minds, was going for a third. So this assailant steps into the crowd, shoots Teddy Roosevelt at point-blank range, and it gives us one of the great TR legends as he refuses medical treatment and insists on going ahead and giving the speech.
Quite a buzz among the crowd.
Yes, and I think we can clearly say that here is one of the few times, as we do this series, that we can say there is a distinct difference in how the Secret Service would
yes.
handle the situation today. Even a candidate, much less a former president as candidate, would have not had the option. He would have been rushed off to the hospital. But he arrives at the hall where his supporters have, of course, heard the news and are reasonably panicked, as
yes.
they would think. So his very arrival both excites and calms the crowd. He walks onto stage, asks the crowd to be quiet, as he has been shot, and he is weak, and his voice is very quiet, and all this drama, reaches into his suit coat, pulls out the blood-soaked speech, which in some ways helped save his life because it had slowed the bullet, the big thick speech in his coat.
Really?
And then he proceeds to speak for an hour and a half.
Politicians. okay, so you have a Roosevelt in this election, but he's not a Republican.
No.
Where he had been before.
No.
Bull Moose, right?
Exactly. He had tried to take the party back from the sitting president, his hand-picked successor in William Howard Taft.
This is like a soap opera.
It is. Failing that attempt, his supporters would walk out of the convention, form the Progressives, but as you said, they are better known by the nickname associated with their standard bearer, the Bull Moose.
The Republican in the race is the incumbent, President Taft.
That's right, and a perfect example of the power of the sitting president. Even though Roosevelt won most of the primaries, which were held at the time, but let's also remember, in this period, the early 20th century, there were far more caucuses,
right?
And then some states would not have a caucus or a primary. They would simply have their Republican or Democratic Party apparatus.
The backroom deals.
Exactly, the backroom deals. So the power in the sitting president was that he could wire the reelection against someone, against an insurgent such as Roosevelt. And that is, of course, what made the delegates so upset that they walked out of the convention.
Uh-huh.
By the time it's all over with, though, you know, Taft is going to actually confide in his closest advisors that he would rather see the Democrat win than Roosevelt.
Ooh, and the Democrat is, of course, Woodrow Wilson.
Right. You've got the governor of New Jersey actually running.
Yes, yes.
For president. Sound familiar? Dr. Woodrow Wilson, Southern-born and Northern-educated, had been the president of Princeton before moving into state politics. And in the book, this is another one of those great little side stories that Chase gives us, is the unusual path that leads the former president of Princeton University to the governorship of New Jersey, and how it really was a failure on Wilson's part with Princeton's faculty and alums getting him run out in many ways of the job that, you know, drives him from academia to politics.
Now, you also mentioned, you said that there were two academics, obviously, of the former president of Princeton. The other academic is
Teddy Roosevelt.
That's not how we usually think of Teddy Roosevelt.
No, he's a prime mover in natural history. You know, when you think of the collections at the Smithsonian, many of his great hunting events.
The national parks.
Yeah. Exactly, in the national parks. But he wrote a four-volume history of the West and served as the president of the American Historical Association in 1912. So, you know, you've got an individual who is far more bookish than his image that he'd like to portray was. And, you know, in some ways you could argue that there were three, because Taft will leave office after losing the election and become a law professor at Yale for several years and the president of the American Bar Association before he returns to federal government as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in 1921.
But Eugene Debs is involved in this as well.
And I think, as I'm looking back at the book that Chase wrote, this was one of the great surprises, because he takes Debs and elevates him to equal status with the other three and makes it, you know, a Fab Four election rather than the big three that most people would teach this in a survey. You get a glimpse into the backstory of Eugene V. Debs and the labor movement and his critical role in bringing that forward, and really a look at an unrest that was bubbling underneath this, you know, split of the Republicans and battle with the Democrats that Eugene V. Debs embodies.
Well, the race seems pretty obvious where it's going to go.
Well,
right?
Not at the time.
Yeah, I mean, we have the benefit of hindsight.
We have the benefit of hindsight. But at the time, there was quite a bit of fear going, depending on who you're backing, as to who was going to win this race. It's one of those, we've talked about it before, the most important election of our time.
Yes.
Time. You know, and
coming to an election box near you
exactly
at any time.
Every four
right.
years. But this one did have a little bit more of that. You've got the sitting president really kind of hoping that his predecessor doesn't win. The election votes, when you tally together the Republicans, they clearly would have run had to a victory if Roosevelt hadn't split the party and led the way open for Wilson. It's just a fascinating race politically. But then you look at things like the grand plans, new nationalism from Roosevelt, which was going to get him labeled as a totalitarian, and Wilson, the Democrat, running under New Freedom, trying to counter the central control of the Republican candidate. A complete role reversal of the stereotypes we today would associate with Republican or Democratic candidate.
Well, if Teddy Roosevelt as the Bull Moose, or if Eugene V. Debs, the progressive, had managed to somehow get the White House 100 years ago, do you think that would have changed what libertarians and Reform Party and all third parties would love to see now? Do you think it would have split it open a little bit, or would have been an anomaly?
I think it would have just been another sea change, because if, let's say, Roosevelt had won, he would have either pulled in pieces of the Republican Party and the Republicans would have morphed into a progressive. If Debs had won, you might have seen pieces of the progressives, the more little L liberals that were associated with Roosevelt, breaking off into that. And just as, you know, you saw the change in 1800 and a lot of the originalists fading away, the Federalist Party disappearing, the Whig Party disappearing in the middle of the 1800s, you would have seen probably one of the parties fade away. And because our whole system is kind of rigged for two, I don't think we would have gotten into that European sort of scenario in which you see two, three, four parties, or even a Canadian situation where you have a pretty standing three-party system.
You know, HBO had a wonderful series a couple years ago about John Adams. This would make a great 11-episode series, don't you think? I mean, you've got a candidate getting shot. You have four candidates. It'd be fascinating.
I think that's what has always brought me back to the election of 1912 and the progressive period. It's just some fascinating politics. It's some fascinating history. There are a lot of echoes to today. But Chase's book, and I just come back to this being one of the more unique ideas for a beach book this summer, but it's a quick read. It's in paperback now. And if you have any interest in this type of fast-paced American history, and especially if you think history's boring, you pick this book up, and you're right. You'll be thinking this should have been a screenplay.
Well, until we find ourselves with sand between our toes,
we're history.